Hi friends, we're launching something very special here at Smart Beauty and I'm so excited to tell you about it. We're looking for a few select beauty entrepreneurs to become our case study clients. And yes, we plan to get you absolutely amazing results that we can both show off. But here's the thing, we're looking for someone very specific. One, you need to be serious about growing and scaling your beauty business. Two, you're struggling to define your brand story and tone of voice. And three, you can keep a secret about what we're working on behind the scenes. If this sounds like you, email hello@smartbeautycreative.com or DM us over on Instagram. Our handle is smartbeautycreative. We're only taking on a handful of clients for this special opportunity and applications close soon. Let's transform your beauty business together. Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm joined by Lizzie Carter, founder of Only Curls, a brand that's revolutionising curly hair care. From her kitchen table startup with just £500 to becoming a major player in the curly hair community, Lizzie shares her journey of creating products that celebrate rather than quote unquote tame curly hair. We discuss the challenges of growing a bootstrap brand, what it means to truly understand your consumer, and how social media transformed the curly hair conversation. Whether you have curls or not, Lizzie's entrepreneurial journey offers valuable insights for anyone interested in beauty innovation and authentic brand building. Let's dive in. Lizzie, thank you so much for joining me today. Obviously, I'm fairly familiar with your story and your sort of journey with the brand, but for those who aren't, can you give us a quick recap of what inspired you to create Only Curls? And what did you think was missing on the market that made you realize that you needed to create a range for specialized curly hair products?
Absolutely. So my business, it really came from a personal need. So obviously I have curly hair. I've grown up with the trials and tribulations of curly hair. You know, GHDs came in when I was about 12 years old, I think. And I spent my teenage years straightening my hair. I bleached my hair. I created a lot of damage, essentially. And I got to my, how old was I when I started Only Curls? I was 29 when I came up with the idea of Only Curls. And at that point, my hair was pretty damaged. And I wanted to start wearing my hair curly again. I went into Boots. And the products on offer, and I think the thing that really stood out to me was the fact that it was still the same products. So the same products that I was buying when I was honestly 12 years old. So this was like almost 20 years later, and it was the same formulas. It was the same packaging. The beauty industry had, you know, evolved over time. And I just felt like there was a real disconnect between what was available for me and my hair and what I was buying in skincare and cosmetics. And the packaging was more desirable, more inspiring. And then I was there shopping for curly hair products and it was the same. And it made me feel just uninspired. And I just thought, wow, if I feel like this, there must be hundreds of women out there feeling the same. And that was really where the story began, because I just felt this need to create this brand that really celebrated curls, that recognized that that customer had been forgotten for a really long time. And we wanted to be there. And I say we, I started the business with my husband. We wanted to be there to sort of, we're almost like sort of a sort of curly hair best friend, telling them that they, you know, that their curls look great. This is the routine that you can follow to, you know, to make it easier. We wanted to make it easy and fun for people with curly hair. And we wanted to offer something to make them feel great about having curls.
It's funny, I'm just nodding along listening to you, because I went through the same thing as somebody who was a teenager in the 90s. I don't know if you, like, obviously you remember that. I think a lot of the products because the kind of archetype Caucasian English hair type is straight, fine hair, and I think a lot of the products were geared towards that. So my hair was pretty much like straw throughout my teenage years, because I just thought, oh well, I've just got frizzy hair. But actually the products on the shelves weren't really catering to me, and there was a lack of education, a massive lack of education. I remember once literally getting a household iron. I remember watching that film Hairspray. I remember copying the girl in that when she would take a household iron. That's what I did to my hair in the end, because yeah, I couldn't afford GHDs. The hair straighteners that I did have just weren't, up to the mark, and I was just so desperate to flatten, the frizz. And I think, yeah, a lot of us have the same kind of story. And I remember being in the hairdressers. This is what I wanted, because I remember I was thinking about this morning, being about 6 or 7, and the hairdresser having a comb, and he was literally hacking away at my hair. And it was so painful and excruciating. And I remember just crying silent tears, like facing away from him. It was just the most horrible experience. And I'm sure a lot of us had similar kind of stories to tell.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we've been able to build such a great community behind this brand for stories like yours there, Viola. Like it's yeah, hair is really important to people. And I think when you grow up in a world where sort of beauty standards are sleek, swishy hair, and you're there as a teenager with frizzy hair, it's not easy. I used to just scrape my back, I think, as a teenager. It didn't help me that my name was Lizzie. I was always called Frizzy Lizzie. I straightened it. I'd even do things like diffuse it and then take a pair of straighteners and straighten my curly hair to try and make it more of a beach wave. And I've had hair appointments where I've sat there. I remember quite clearly being about 11 years old, and the hairdresser's sort of brushing my hair and it getting bigger and bigger. And the couple of hairdressers being around me being like, "Wow, you've got such beautiful curly hair." And I was just looking at myself in the mirror and it's getting bigger and bigger. And I think that is the other thing as well, like going through all those years where curly hair wasn't really celebrated so much, it sort of resulted in also, and I don't mean to knock any professionals here because, hairdressers are so talented, but there was many years where they didn't need to do curly hair because there was nobody going into the hairdresser with hair like mine and asking for them to diffuse it. They wanted to walk in and walk out with a sleek blow dry. So then there ended up a lot of hairdressers not knowing how to do a good curly blow dry. So lots of our customers are always asking us. I mean, we're stocked in around 350 salons, and one of our sort of USPs really is that we sort of as a brand connect our customers with hairdressers. So for our business, it's not just about the product, it's about building like brand loyalty and how can we do that, and how can we help people feel really good about their hair.
That's a really lovely mission to have. And what would you say has been the biggest learning curve since launch to now, in terms of like what you've learned about formulations and curly hair care in general, would you say?
I mean, I've learned so much along the way. My background was fashion design, so beauty was a whole new world to me, and I just learning so much all the time, not only about product, about hair, but also, about business. Like I had no, you, I was fairly naive, I think, in the beginning, but sometimes I think you've got to start somewhere. So
For sure.
it's been an amazing learning journey. I think the thing that I've learned the most really is that no curl is the same, no hair is the same. And it's not as simple, and we're still working on this now. Like, how can we offer? And I think this is one of the biggest challenges in our business. Like, how can we make this simple for people and give them a routine that's right for their hair type without overcomplicating it, when every different hair or customer might need a slight tweak in their routine to make it perfect for them? Because you might have somebody that has more wavy hair, but it's super dense, or it's more porous, or it's there's lots of factors that go into why a product might be right for your hair. And I think trying to figure that out for customers to give them the products that will work for their hair is fairly challenging. And then you've got things like the protein moisture balance. You've got to think about hair care almost like skincare. You've got the scalp to consider. You've got how you're sort of you also sort of building these products up in your routine, almost like skincare. You start with your cleanser, your conditioner, a leave-in cream. Do you need a mousse too? So trying to simplify that for people and make it right for each individual customer is a challenge. We do have a curl quiz on our website, actually, that we're working on at the moment to really help with that and extend our product line even further. For us, it is so important that we can offer something for every curl. And when customers come to us, I've got a sensitivity. We had a lot of customers saying, I really want to use your products, but I've got a sensitivity for fragrance. So straight away, it's like, right, let's do these products in fragrance free. And I think a big company could look at our sales in fragrance free and say, you know what, let's remove that SKU because it's not driving as much volume as we need really for the business. But for me, that doesn't really matter. Again, it's about making sure that if that customer's coming to us, there's something there for them. The other thing, let me think what I was gonna.
And I was going to ask the products that you offer, that's for like all curly hair types, so from curly to coily, from like 2A to 4C and beyond, would you say?
Exactly, yeah. And we're expanding the product range even further now. We're just about to launch, we're working on it at the moment, sort of an even more moisturizing leave-in, actually. And then we're calling it our intense moisture leave-in cream. We're about to launch a intense hold gel also that's more for our coily customers. So we just really listen to what our customers are asking. Four, and when we see there's something missing in the range, we make it for them.
And I guess one of the solutions to what you were saying about how, no curly hair type is the same is to have more of a routine of products as opposed to like, this is the one product that you should be using for your hair. As I think what you guys do is say, well, here are the sort of a range of products you can use and you can kind of mix and match depending on your curl type. Would you say that's okay?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, I think they call it the skinification of hair care. It's almost like skincare. I think so many of us are used to, I think we for years we've been used to sort of cleanser, toner, moisturizer, and really similar with the way that we see hair care too now, and especially for curly hair, because you really do need a leave-in without that. And some gel for extra hold. And I think to somebody new to a curly routine, it can seem a lot. And I think sometimes customers can see our tutorials online and think, oh no, I don't want to do all that. But when you're there doing it, it's really fast and really easy, and it makes such a difference.
And I think the sort of world of curly hair is it's a very sensitive topic. And rightly so. I think given the sort of language that we've grown up with around curly hair, that you need to tame it, that it's like frizzy and unmanageable and wild and all these kind of derogatory terms. How do you navigate that as a curly hair brand to make sure that your language is sensitive and the education that you're putting out there is kind of hits the right tone, as it were?
That's such a good question, actually, and we do talk about this a lot internally because I think frizz is seen as such a negative word. But for us as a business and a brand, talking about the fact that it reduces frizz, that is what sells our product. When we asked our customers, we surveyed our customers, what is it that you're coming to us for? And the number one answer by far was frizz. So I think as a business, for us not to speak to that in our marketing would be.
A tricky balance.
Really tricky, but yeah, we do talk about it a lot, and I think it's just we're constantly looking at how our copy and making sure it is positive. I mean, I started this conversation about how our business is there to celebrate curls, and we absolutely wouldn't want people to feel that way. And if we ever get feedback, we acknowledge and address that. I think we had that with some emails once. I think we were asking people on what was their most common, or what was their common curl problem, or what were they coming to us for, and the answers were fairly negative. And I think that was a really good learning for us. We asked them, are they coming to us for less frizz, or it was like you say, fairly, it was more the focusing on the problems rather than the solutions. And I think it's definitely been a sort of learning, we've had learning curves on that, but certainly we avoid words like unmanageable or unruly, and try to keep things very positive. But being a sort of problem solution brand, it's tricky to get that balance right, for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think, I guess it's more about kind of celebrating as opposed to seeing curly hair as a problem to be solved, isn't it?
Exactly.
Do you think, like, the curly hair world, obviously it's come on a long way, especially since lockdown, where more people are wearing their hair natural, and you guys were kind of at the forefront of that. Do you think that things have drastically changed since you guys started out?
Definitely. I mean, I think the main thing, social media has changed things for curly hair. I wish social media had been around when I was a teenager, because I would have known not to put in all that crunchy hair mousse, or not to, just so simple, like, just don't brush your curls when they're dry. It's so obvious, but I didn't know that.
Can be a force for good, can't it? Social, everyone's kind of damning
Yeah.
about social media, and it's like, well, I'm relieved that wasn't around when I was growing up. But it's interesting to hear you say you wish it was around, because, like, yeah, there is
Social media.
that visibility that you don't have if you're cut off, cut off from that digital space.
Exactly. I think, well, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with social media, probably. I mean, I think most people are probably the same. I mean, I worry about it so much for my young children, but at the same time, it's like, I couldn't have started this business without social media. Like, social media literally changed mine and my family's life. So I also have to be grateful for that. And the same with, TikTok game changed my business. While I worry about it for my children, I think there's also a lot of community building that has happened through social media that wasn't there before. And one of those huge communities that has come out and grew massively in lockdown, like you say, is the curly hair community. If you look on Facebook, there's so many groups dedicated to curly hair. And it even goes as far as, and I found this quite funny, my friend is a GP. There's a Facebook group that is doctors with curly hair. So it's like,
Talk
it gets
about
niche, but then it gets even more niche. And yeah, it's we and these groups are great. People just want to help each other get the best results from their curls. So I think it has changed. We were definitely at the forefront of that change in 2016. I spotted the gap at a time when a couple of other brands did as well, and we all started at a similar time, without sort of in isolation, without knowing each other at that time. And I think between us and then all the curly hair influencers that were also starting about that time, 2016, it's like we all grew up together and really had a huge impact in this movement. And then before you know it, you see a huge brand kind of copying your language in their ads. And you think, well, you were doing curly hair products for probably 50 years and you've just ignored us. Now you're copying my ad campaign. It's frustrating, but also great, because our goal was to get more people to embrace their curls. And I'm really proud that our brand was at the forefront of that. But it has changed, and there's certainly more brands coming out now, and then bigger brands remembering their curly hair customer too, which for me, given what we set out to do, although it's more competition for our business, is hugely positive.
Definitely. And it goes to show that as an indie brand, those big corporate conglomerates are keeping an eye on you. The indie brands are the ones that they're kind of watching as sort of, what's next, in, when it comes to what's happening in the industry and beauty trends and things like that. I think that, indie brands like yours are at the forefront.
Absolutely. And without social media, I don't think we could have been, or at least it would have remained much smaller, than we are now. We heard from we launched in Boots actually just last month. We've always worked direct to consumer, and last month we launched in Boots, which was a huge strategic move for our business and really exciting. So we're in 390 Boots stores, and we are now on week two of sales, and we are number four in the curly hair category, which when
Amazing.
we're such a small brand that I literally started Only Curls with £500 of savings, and we've just reinvested our profits to where we've got to today, and to be number four, and that's against some huge brands with all that marketing budget. So it's
Just
just
to
like,
show.
yes, yeah.
Congratulations, that is a fantastic achievement. And I'd love to hear more about that because your journey is so inspiring because you're completely bootstrapped, right? No investors. You started with £500, and to be where you are today is just absolutely, it's so inspiring, I think, to a lot of people. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how all that came about and how that happened?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I look back now and I actually really miss those early days. And I was thinking, oh, I was happiest when I was packing all the orders myself. And I always wondered, I've been wondering lately, if I did go back, would I still love it as much? I'm not sure. I do wonder if we could ever start something all again, because it was hard work. So my husband and I started the business with £500. We got a sample run of hair towels. I got some labels made. The quantities I'm talking here of the towels we were running were so small that the factory wouldn't even do the labels for me. I was at home sewing them on my sewing machine at home, rolling the towels in front of the TV, and dropping our orders off. We were getting a couple of orders a day at this time. We launched the brand through, we launched a Shopify store. We started our Instagram account. We were doing lots of gifting, and that was resulting in, a handful of orders a day, which I would drop off at the post office on my way to work. Then, a few towels evolve. Suddenly you're doing 10 towels a day, and it starts to get a little bit more traction. And Hugo, my husband Hugo, and I thought, right, well, now's the time to put some money, let's into hair products. Let's get these hair products made that we really. The hair products, were going to be the move the needle thing for our business. So that was always something we wanted to do. But we used the towel as a test. And I think that when anyone asks me, where should I begin with a business? For us, starting with one product made it so easy. And it was such a good test case to say, yeah, there's actually customers here that are looking for things for their curly hair. But it was a side hustle. We were doing it alongside our full-time jobs, giving it a go. And then it was really during my maternity leave when it really, I was at home, had a little bit more time. My baby didn't sleep at night, but she did sleep a lot in the day. So I did find I had more time in the day to pack these orders, to be, again, doing more gifting to influencers, to just building my brand at home on my maternity leave. And it was like, the orders just kept growing. We launched the cream and the gel. They were our first products that we launched, and people loved them. They sold out fairly quickly. And then just all this demand was growing. And it was all down to the fact that we couldn't buy a lot. Like, we didn't have much money to invest in these products. So we were doing these small runs, and then we were selling out. And this was a cycle for quite a few years, really, until we finally had enough in our cash flow to get on top of our sort of stock issues. But I always wondered if customers thought we were doing it on purpose, but we really weren't. I just could not get on top of the stock levels that we needed. But really, those like little parcels I was dropping off on the way to work sort of then ended up in me taking my daughter along with me. I mean, my first trip I did after having my baby, the first sort of outing I did was to the post office with the Only Curls orders, and they just it grew. Like, first of all, it was a few parcels under the buggy, and then it was another bag clipped to the buggy, and they were under the buggy, and then there was a bag on one shoulder and the other shoulder, two bags clipped to the buggy, and I'm like taking all these parcels to the post office. And then it got to the point where suddenly we had enough parcels every day that the postman would come to us to collect. And I remember that year, Hugo and I were joking that our like only Curls Christmas party was me, him, and Simon, the postman that came by every day. And then Black Friday 2019, I had like 400 orders over that weekend. We lived in a tiny flat and it was like every surface was covered with parcels. And then that was the time to move it out my house and really start growing this business up and doing things properly. So the journey has been amazing.
Yeah. And when it comes to like the formulations, like what was your journey with that? Because obviously ingredient transparency is a huge issue with a lot of consumers. How did you go about kind of researching and finding like the best formulations for curly hair types? Because I imagine there was not that much information available. And then also in terms of like the ingredients you chose and how all that came about.
Absolutely. So, I mean, in the beginning, it was just a lot of product testing and research, seeing what was out there in the market, what I liked about some things, what I didn't like about others. And what I really identified was that there was a gap for lightweight moisture. Like most of the products I was trying were either too heavy, too sticky, or they were this kind of nice, lightweight, natural feeling products that I wanted, but they were full of silicones, which are not a bad ingredient. So I think this is where, especially in the curly hair world, there's,
A lot of
and
scam.
actually world, a lot of scaremongering, a lot. And especially in all these Facebook groups that we talked about, a lot of misinformation being spread. And it's there's so much regulation in place to make products that we're using safe. But there are things that we choose not to use. So silicones, we don't use just because they make your hair feel so lovely and smooth, which when you have curly hair, of course, that would be lovely, but they have a tendency to build up. And then that blocks moisture, which when you've got hair that is typically dry, you just do not want to block that moisture. So we choose not to use silicones, because when, we also don't need to use sulfates. If we're not using silicones in the products, we don't need sulfates in our shampoo. Sulfates are a much heavier duty cleansing agent, which again, I feel like there's been scaremongering about sulfates. They're not
Yeah,
bad. They're not
hair
bad
types.
for you. Some hair types, they're great. And if your hair's, if you've got more of an oily scalp, if if you use a lot of hairspray, things, you're going to need that sulfate to really remove that oil buildup, any products on your hair. But for us, we don't need those. So, and with sulfates, they can be a little bit drying. So, we choose not to use them. So, I think I'm not a formulist. My background is design. So, but I am a product developer. Fashion design is about looking at trends, looking at gaps in the market, taking those trends, taking what worked well last year, and then drawing up those ideas and taking them to your factory to create it for you. And so I approached it in a similar way to that, really. I found my gap, I found my competition. I thought what was, I figured out what I wanted it to be, and I went with that brief to a cosmetic manufacturer and partnered with them to create the products. And together, we absolutely nailed it. Like the first four products that we launched, I mentioned earlier, we launched with our cream, our hydrating curl cream, and our enhancing curl gel. They were our two first launches. We had four products ready at that time, but I didn't have enough money to do all four at once. So we then launched our cleanser and our conditioner it's probably about 6 months after the cream and gel. And even now, those four products are like our top four SKUs. So which is amazing, really. And we've never changed the formula. Some businesses probably would to save money, but we haven't. They work so well, and they still continue to be our top sellers, which is amazing.
I love your gel so much. I think it's just the one of the few products that doesn't have that awful crunch. Like I remember when I was being like 12 or 13, like we all used that like electric blue hair gel that would sort of set like cement. Whereas your gel, it was one of the first products of its kind that I was like, oh wow, it gives me that definition without the, yeah, without that awful kind of crunchiness that we've come to kind of expect. And I think a lot of us with curly hair have kind of, in a way, we've kind of learned to just accept, oh, well, you know, it's no point kind of speaking up because this is what, you know, we have to just accept what we're given a lot of the time. And I think now more and more of us be more outspoken and saying, well, no, we don't want to accept these kind of subpar products for our hair. We want something a bit more, you know, more than what we've had to contend with over the years.
Absolutely. And I think because of our history with gel, sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't have called the enhancing curl gel a gel, because it's almost like between a gel and a serum in texture. And
That's what it looks like.
I think some people have sort of history with gel. But I think once you've used it and sort of come around to the fact that all you need to do is, like, as well with any gel, if it is a bit crunchy at the end, you can usually, if the product's good, you can scrunch that out too. So it's about education along with the products.
Yeah, it was just like my mind was blown. I was like, I never realized a gel could feel like this, but it should be able to feel like that. It shouldn't have to, you know, just, you know, like I say, give you that kind of curl that is, you know, just lacks movement entirely. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of that product. Going back to what you're saying about industry trends, what are some really exciting kind of trends in the kind of curly hair sphere that you're seeing at the moment?
I think scalp care, I think, is a big thing that we are looking at the moment. I mean, it's especially for curly hair, like, because we're not brushing our hair every day, it means that we're not sort of giving our scalp that stimulation that people with straight hair would be doing, you know, multiple times a day. You're sort of stimulating your scalp, you're dragging that sort of oil from the scalp down your hair and moisturizing your hair. Because we aren't doing that, it typically leads to sort of dryness of the scalp, dryness of your hair. And I think scalp care, I mean, it's such a buzzword within the sort of beauty world anyway. And there's more products coming out now, like tonics, scrubs, you know, clarifying shampoos. I think that, and sort of ingredients to looking at more what's going on in skincare too, with like the sort of acids, or, you know, looking at how you can exfoliate without necessarily a harsh scrub. So I think for me, that is a trend that we're really sort of leaning into and working on at the moment, because I think it would be very well received by our customers.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time for things like scalp care at the moment. And you were saying about how, you know, sometimes people's hair type can change after they've had a baby, and sort of hormonal shifts and things like menopause and stuff. Is that something that you're kind of hoping to look into as a brand?
Yeah, definitely. And we're talking about that, you know, menopause, you can lose a lot of hair, your hair becomes a lot finer. So how can we help that customer with a more volumizing range? That was actually something that I again was a little naive to when I started Only Curls. I didn't know how much hormones change your hair. So it customers, you know, suddenly realize puberty, that they have curly hair, and then it changes again, like you say, after having a baby. And it's not just about, I mean, I think everyone's familiar with postpartum hair loss, but actually the structure of your hair can change, and suddenly your hair can be curly or it can be less curly. Actually, for me, which was unfortunate timing, I had my baby in 2017, my hair became much less curly, which was tricky when I was starting a curly hair brand.
Not ideal.
Not ideal. And then menopause, maybe my curls will come back soon with menopause. But also chemotherapy. Now, this was something that I definitely didn't know about until people were emailing in and saying to me, you know, can you help me with my hair? I've just gone through chemotherapy and now it's grown back curly. And I did not know this was the thing. But again, chemotherapy can change the structure of the hair, and often it grows back curly. So, such a nice thing that we're able to do to support those customers that have been through, you know, an awful experience. And I'm like happy that we can help in that very small way. I think people can think hair, if you're going through something like cancer, that hair could be trivial, but it's so important to people, and being there to be able to help them with the right routine when their hair's grown back completely different to how they expected is a great thing that we can do as a business.
And following on from that, you said that earlier that you're kind of a social media first brand. Do you think that's changed how the way brands kind of get feedback from customers and when it comes to sort of new product development? Because you've got that direct line with your customers. They're telling you what they need, what they want, what they think of the products. And you can be just much more dynamic when it comes to tweaking your products or developing new ones. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And the internet too, like being able to sell online, we can survey our customers. We have a survey at the end of a purchase, and we ask them questions about how they found out about us, but we can also ask them, what were you buying before you bought Only Curls? Or what do you feel is missing from our product range? What are you looking for that we don't have? So we have so much communication with our customers, which I love, and our customers have really shaped our brand. From day one, it was always about customer service. The first employee that we had was a customer service rep, and she's been amazing. She was a customer that emailed in, I love your products, I love your brand, I like these emails I'm getting from you. Is there anything that I can come and help with? And she came in as our customer service manager, and she's still here today. So we see every comment, every DM, every email as a touch point with our customers, every post that they do. And we use that feedback, direct line of communication from them to really, really build the range. We also have and I love this, we have a private members Facebook group called the Curl Club, or the Only Curls Club. And they're sort of our most loyal customers. We invite people, once they've got to sort of third purchase, I think we invite people to the club, and they give us such honest feedback. It's absolutely brilliant. And they will post if they're having any, problems with their curls, or if they want tips. And we reply to any post, but also it's about our customers also helping each other. So we've built this, people are making friends on there. I love it.
That's really lovely. No, that's amazing. And obviously, as you know, at Smart Beauty, we focus on like brand story and tone of voice and how brands like indie brands can really stand out, from the crowd. Because obviously, it's a very saturated market, the beauty market. How did your brand story and your tone of voice come about? And how do you think that pivotal that was in playing a role in your brand success?
The tone of voice came from me understanding our customer. And I think that was the biggest difference between Only Curls and big brands, but also other curl brands. Like, I think that I started this business from a personal need. I was not building this business. I didn't have an exit plan. I didn't know what I was doing. I started this business to create, these products that I thought was missing. And my goal was to just work for myself and make the salary that was the difference between my previous salary as a fashion designer. When I paid the nursery fees, I figured out I needed to make £100 a week. So my goal was to make £100 a week and fill this gap in the market with these products and create a nice brand. And I think because of that, and understanding the customer, the tone of voice developed from that. And we've just taken a very, very personal approach. Like, we say that we're very, really welcoming. People feel comfortable to come and speak to us, to send us a comment. Like, we make that very clear, I think, in the way that we do copy for our emails and website and all our communications with our customer. And I think that has really set us apart from other brands. And, now there's more competition. I think that we're still, I mean, I don't mean to blow my own trumpet, but I think we're still doing it better. And it came from that. But I think now, as the brand's getting bigger, the team's getting bigger, We're figuring out now, we're sort of working backwards. Like most brands, or most people that are building a brand that know what they're doing, they'll start with their marketing pillars and, this is our tone of voice. Whereas for me, it was just coming from my head. And then I employed customers. So they were already familiar with that tone of voice. Like all our customer support team, we call them Curl Support, they were all customers. So they were receiving that tone of voice and they were just ready to jump into it when they joined. And then now we're sort of working with more external partners on things. We're really having to like extract this tone of voice from my team's head and get it down on paper and really kind of outline what our brand is, which has been a really good exercise actually, but interesting doing it 8 years after launching.
No, for sure. As a female founder, obviously there's a certain expectation with indie brands that you're required to kind of be the face of the brand. Did you feel that kind of pressure that you also had to be a brand ambassador? Because I feel like that's a full-time job in itself, and a lot of brand founders are finding now that they also have to be influencers, which I think affects female founders more than it does men.
Yeah.
How do you kind of navigate that? And how much of your own sort of personal life did you share when you were kind of doing all of your sort of brand marketing and talking about your own story?
That's such a good question. And it's true. I mean, my background is design. I'm not comfortable getting on camera. I don't even like having my picture taken. I think as well, there's a lot of pressure on me for my hair to be perfect. Like I said, I just went through two pregnancies during the time that I've been running this business. That I mean, you know what it's like when you've got half a baby and you're trying to work and juggle everything. And I'm behind the scenes with my hair. I've not washed it for a week. It's piled up on my head, and it's really hard actually to kind of you end up feeling like people talk about imposter syndrome all the time, when it comes to their work. And actually, I feel like I have it sometimes with my hair because I definitely feel, if my hair's not perfect sometimes, I definitely feel that pressure. But how have I navigated this? The brand isn't about me. Like, the brand is about our community. We use a lot of our customers' videos and pictures in our marketing. I've also got a team. Like I said, my team, most of them were customers before. I had my HR manager was someone who emailed in just at the right time. I'm a customer, I do HR, shall we have a chat? And she's been absolutely brilliant with my business. So not only have I been able to build like a team that are ultimately brand ambassadors, I've built a team of people that loved the product before they even joined. So I was able to make the business about our community, about our team, and it's not just about me.
No, because I think there's that know, like, and trust factor, isn't it? People want to see like who's behind the brand that they're buying into, and to kind of have that human to human contact, especially on social media. It's kind of like, well, who is behind this brand and who are we talking to? So to have kind of founders like yourself, talking about your own journey, I guess is super important. But there's that it's striking that balance, isn't it? And like you say, leaning on your team.
Yeah, I haven't shied away from the fact of sharing the journey. I mean, I think our customers have loved being a part of that journey. They're so proud of the brand and they know how it started and they've seen the pictures of me packing the orders at home and they know I started it with my husband. We made this terrible mistake quite a few years ago now when we were tired. We sent an email out to our email list, and you have to code the first name when you draft these emails. But it was late. We'd been up the night before with our baby, and we didn't code the name. And we always use the test name, Hugo, which is my husband's name. And we sent out an email to probably, I'm not sure how big our list was at that time, maybe 100,000 people. And everybody got an email that started with, "Hi, Hugo." And friend screenshots it and sends it to me, circles it, and it's like, yeah, I get this message. I remember sitting in my living room and she said to me, "Was it just me that got this?" And we looked, and like, of course, no, 100,000 people got the message saying, "Hi, Hugo." And this is where, as a small brand, I mean, again, it was just such a good opportunity to introduce Hugo. So we then go back with an email with a subject, oops, you're not Hugo, and with a picture of me and Hugo, and we explained, who he was and what he did in the business. Because of course, Hugo's very much behind the scenes. He doesn't have curly hair. He's male. He's not, he doesn't really have a place on our Instagram feeds. And nobody knew, really. Nobody knew that I'd started the business with my husband. So we were like, okay, we took that as a really good opportunity to introduce him. And I think it was the most opened and most replied to email we've ever done. So the customers love to know what they're buying into, and they love that it's a family business. And by sharing that, in turn, we've definitely gained their support. And to the point where, like in the Curl Club this week, everyone's excited about the Boots launch, and they're popping in and they're sending their pictures and they're tidying up the shelves for us. I mean, what big brand would get that? So I think they making people feel a part of it. It's a balance, isn't it? It's not all about me. It's about the customer too. But to share the journey, I think, has contributed to our success.
I think that's a PR masterstroke. It's like holding up your hands and saying, look, we're not perfect, but this is us, warts and all, like behind the scenes. I think that's an amazing way to have dealt with a situation like that. I think most people would have just freaked out and just
I would
said
freak out.
it. But then like just not done anything. Whereas you guys really kind of leaned into it and made the most of that opportunity. I think it's a good lesson to be learned from that. We're almost at the end of our time, but can I just ask quickly about sustainability? Because I know that's a huge kind of priority with a lot of indie brands. I mean, I think a lot of customers have come to expect it as standard as opposed to just something nice to have. How have you guys dealt with the sustainability issue with Only Curls?
I mean, by just doing the best that we can, really, with what's available to us. I think as an indie brand, there's minimums involved with a lot of packaging. So, if we want to develop something completely different and new, we've never had the budget to do that. So we do have to lean into what is available from our supply chain. And what we've been doing is just choosing what is best available to us. So for our plastic bottles, we're actually working on changing them at the moment, but what we went for was bioplastic, which is produced, the ethanol is produced from sugarcane. So it's, more greener than your regular plastic. And then we have a post-consumer recycled content too. So we feel we've chosen the best for our plastic bottles, but we don't scream about it. I think some brands do. I'm very conscious of the fact that we're still selling products in plastic bottles. And I think we don't want to greenwash people, but what we really do is choose the best that we can choose for our products, make sure that they are also recyclable. We wouldn't use any, we don't use any plastic in our packing. We use boxes and paper, and we use compostable bags for our accessories. So for us, it's about not preaching or greenwashing, but just choosing the best that is available to us. And now it's really exciting as the business has grown with our volumes. We can definitely be doing more interesting things. And I'm really excited to be working on a branding refresh at the moment and actually relooking at all our packaging across the board, because what we can do now is so much more elevated and interesting with the business at the size it is. So it's a really exciting time for us. And then looking at things, we're actually about to launch refill pouches, which is something that our customers have wanted for ages. And I am really excited about those. So yes, sustainability, super important to me and my team. And we're constantly researching and trying to do better.
Yeah, I was speaking to trend forecaster Louise Whitbread the other day, who came on the podcast, and we were saying about how there's kind of in the sustainability conversation, curly hair gets left out quite a lot. It's not super inclusive. So, for example, the kind of waterless beauty movement, a lot of those waterless products probably aren't great for curly hair. So a shampoo bar is all well and good, but it's not going to work on my hair, probably wouldn't work on your hair. So it's things like that I think when people talk about sustainability, often get left out of the conversation. So anyway, that's another long conversation for another podcast, but I thought
No,
it was.
it's true. And there are such interesting things happening now, not just in packaging, like you say, in formulation. We do actually have a shampoo bar, and it's really nice. I'll send you one to try because it's great. Conditioner bar, we've never been able to do. We've never been able to get enough of
Problem. Yeah.
that product slip off the bar to make it work for curly hair. We just haven't. And I just don't, I think I'm going to accept that we can't get there. But the shampoo bar we have, and I think, like I say, just constantly evolving and doing the best that we can.
And what's next for OnlyCurls? Like, what are you allowed to reveal?
Lots of NPD in the pipeline that I'm excited about. And international expansion. Like, we want to like take over the world with this product. We want to, we've got pretty far in the UK now, especially with the Boots launch, and our brand awareness is definitely growing. So we want to definitely take OnlyCurls international. So that's certainly the next move for the business and the team.
World domination. Love that. Thank you so
We aim high.
as you should. Thank you so much, Lizzie, for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat, and I think people will get so many great insights from what you've said. Look forward to seeing what the next steps are on your journey and what you do next with Only Curls.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.